You're listening to The Pulse. I'm Mike and Scott, and our show this week is about science and education, and it's also Teacher Appreciation Week. So we asked our listeners, hey, tell us about teachers who have had a huge influence on you. Here's one recording we got.
My name is Deshika Narayanan. I'm an assistant professor of astronomy and physics at Haverford College. Back in the early 2000s, when I was a PhD student in astronomy, I was doing a lot of computer coding, and I spent an entire summer searching for one bug in my computer program, and it was driving me absolutely crazy. I felt like I was spinning my wheels all summer, constantly bringing plots to my advisor, and feeling like I was making absolutely no progress, which, of course, since I was an early grad student, made me doubt my prospects in a career in astronomy. And during one particularly downtime, my advisor said to me, he said, you know, Deshika, if people got it right the first time, they would call it search and not research. So you're doing the right thing. And that little quote gave me confidence that other people also struggled in math and physics and astronomy, and that I was going down the right path. And eventually, I did find the bug.
Thank you for sharing that. And sometimes an important teacher is not a trained educator. Here's a memory shared by paleontologist Ken Lacovera.
When I was in second grade, a woman brought a box of rocks and minerals and fossils into my Cub Scout meeting. And I had really never seen anything like this. And it blew my mind. And I went home the next day and I wrote an essay. And I wrote that sedimentary rocks were the best, because you could find fossils in them. So that one random act of kindness by a woman whose name I don't know really changed the course of my life, and I'm incredibly grateful for it today.
Ken Lacovera went on to discover one of the biggest dinosaurs ever, the Dreadnoughtus. So those rocks and that Cub Scout meeting really paid off. But not everybody is that lucky to have one person to just walk in and inspire them. So how do you get kids interested in the sciences? Some people think that if scientists were better at talking about what it is they actually do, making it digestible for kids, that would help. Tanya English spoke with some scientists who are trying to learn to be better communicators, and she started at the University of Pennsylvania.
Have you guys learned about the different parts of the brain at all?
We're at a science carnival, and college students are stationed all around the room like competing barkers, enticing little kids to step right up for a chance to smell something, smash something, or get their hands dirty.
Yeah, sheep.
Oh, a sheep.
So this is a sheep brain. Do one of you want to try to cut the brain directly in half? Here, you can do it first, and then you can do a second cut after.
Four girls from Cornerstone Christian Academy in Philadelphia are a swirl of pleated skirts, hair ribbons, and a pink backpack. They have on rubber gloves, they have a scalpel, and they're just waiting for their turn to slice into a sheep's brain or blow something up.
My name is Miranda, and like when we screamed, stuff like exploded everywhere.
This fair is supposed to make the scientists better communicators and make the students love science. These girls don't need convincing, but ask about Bill Nye the Science Guy, and they're not impressed.
Have you seen him?
Yeah.
Think he's cool or not so cool?
Not so cool.
Cachet, Miranda, and Kennedy can't name one scientist that they love.
I don't really know people that do science. I just like it.
So who do you like on TV that does science? Do you know anyone that does science? Adults?
No.
Do you know any women who do science?
No.
If you want them to pay attention to molecular fusion or engineering, the girls suggest that you get Beyonce or one of their favorite teen actors from the Disney Channel.
Scott Jackson, Pedalist.
To talk with them about science. One experiment is set up like an air hockey game. Kids are shuttling balls back and forth to show how nerve cells in their brain communicate. Behind the table is college senior Sheila Shankar. She's a double major and a member of the Honor Society. You couldn't ask for a better science role model. But when she starts her spiel, I'm lost.
So we have one side here, which act as the vesicles, which release neurotransmitters.
What are vesicles?
Vesicles are like little bubbles that release neurotransmitters, or the chemicals.
What are neurotransmitters?
Neuroscience is almost like Shankar's native language, but I speak plain English, so I ask her to start over.
So say that you're one cell phone and you want to communicate with your friend who has another cell phone. You would send your friend a text message, which is like a neuron sending neurotransmitters to another neuron.
And the second time around, she's ready with an answer that both the kids and I understand. Every year, there's a contest in New York that gives adults a chance to practice talking that way with children. Stony Brook University challenges scientists to explain a simple concept in a way that engages an 11-year-old.
The fuel loses mass, it turns to a gas before the next changes through.
The first winner was a guy studying quantum optics who submitted this song.
Pyrolysis, chemiluminescence.
You cannot put that on the interview, though.
Christine O'Connell is Associate Director of the Alan Alda Center for Communicating Science. She says it's 4 years later, and she still remembers that song and all the science concepts that it explains. O'Connell says contest founder Alan Alda was fascinated by fire when he was a boy, and he asked his teacher, what is a flame?
Her answer to him was oxidation, and that just didn't satisfy his curiosity at all. It made him more confused.
Some scientists get tangled up in academic speak. Good explainers say just enough and leave young students a little bit curious. Stony Brook teaches workshops on how to do that.
A lot of what we do is based in improvisation and teaching scientists improvisation games and techniques, which is all about connecting to the person you're talking to, getting out of your own head, putting the focus on them.
Past contestants have had success with animated videos and fancy editing, but sometimes the winner is the scientist who simply stands in front of a camera and uses the most vivid words. O'Connell says every year, kids from around the world give the scientist constructive criticism.
It's okay to be funny, but it's not okay to be silly. You know, we're 11, we're not 7.
This year, the contest question is, what is sound?
Very much. Let's go to Illinois. Come on up to the mic at the Roosevelt Middle School. What did you think of that video?
Well, I thought it was the best entry that there was because it used hands-on experiments, and it made me wonder about other things, about how my instrument, which is the tuba, made sound, even though it didn't have strings.
About 23,000 11-year-olds are reviewing the videos from three finalists. That includes a submission from college physics teacher Nick Wexer.
All sound starts as a vibration. Something has to wiggle. Seriously, touch right here on your neck and say, come on.
Keeping it interactive is always a good idea.
Wexer says he's an introvert, but when he puts on his YouTube persona and calls himself Nick Lucid, he's different. In his explainer video, Nick Lucid shrinks down
Super Zoom
to take the kids on a deep dive tour of the inner ear. He never gets lost in jargon.
Instead of jumping right in and talking about, you know, waves and using words like frequency, I had to start talking about, you know, things, you know, vibrating or wiggling.
And that might be the best advice for aspiring science communicators. There's power in words like wiggle.
So sound starts out as a wiggle in something solid, and then becomes a wiggle in the air, and then a wiggle in your ear, and finally a perception in your brain. It's a perception of a vibration. I hope that made sense to some of you. And until next time, remember, it's okay to be a little crazy.
Did you like this story? Subscribe to our podcast. It's on iTunes.